right, folks. Well, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. I'm so excited to be here. I've got the best freaking job in the world. I get to hang out here on Monday nights and talk poker with my friends live on YouTube at 7:30 Eastern every Monday. And someone's going to win a prize just for showing up tonight, just like we do every week. So I have to thank our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino, because most of what we do here is free. We're a largely volunteer-based organization, and so their support means a lot. And that's why I'm going to take a moment just to remind folks that on October 18th through 22nd, it's the Hallow Scream Tournament Series at Running Aces, where the buy-in's only $360, and you don't want to miss that. It's going to be a fun group over there. Our sponsors are a big part of what we do, but our premium members are really the wind beneath our wings. We don't have a new premium member to shout out this week, but I did get an email from, I won't dox her completely, but her name is Mary. She's been a premium member here for a while. And I just wanted to say on behalf of everyone here at Rec Poker, Mary, I hope you and your family are doing great. I know you guys are going through a lot right now, but everyone here is rooting for you, and I'm sure everything's going to go great. And everything's going to be perfect. And thank you for that wonderful email. It touched my heart. And I'm so glad that you're part of our group here at Rec Poker. That's the premium members that I love to talk about. But the magic makers that really make all the magic happen here at Rec Poker are the Wrecking Crew. This is the group of leaders that contribute their time and money day in, week out, month up and down, doing study groups, making videos, joining the podcast, and adding their support to what we do here at Rec Poker. If you want to find out about more, me and the other members of the Wrecking Crew, because I am just one of the group, you can head on over to rec.poker/crew, or you can just listen up, because you're going to meet a few of them right here tonight on the air, starting as ever with producing co-host Chris Jones. Oh God, Chris, save us.
I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5v5 on Threads or Twitter, or 5x5 in the Poker Stars home game.
My name is Joe Coolis. You can find me at Joe Cool PhD, cool with a K, or Elvita11 in the home game.
I'm Rob Washam. You can find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere.
And I'm Sasha Sutton. You can find me at Poker for Girls on Twitter, or soon at the Rec Poker website.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm excited. We're going to be talking to Caitlin Arnwine in just a moment here. But before we do, I just want to remind our listeners, if you stick around till the end of the show, we're going to talk to Sasha and find out a little bit about her and what caused her to join the Wrecking Crew and what we can expect from her in the next little while, which I'm really excited about. We're also going to talk about some new scheduling changes in October and November. Some new prizes we're adding to the home game club for premium members, and some details about our November trip to Council Bluffs, Iowa with Run Good between November 14th and 19th. So stick around for some details on that. And of course, to support our food bank charity drive here, we always give away a prize at the end of the show. And we'll be doing that here to one of our YouTube viewers. So thank you all for joining us. But mostly, I want to thank Caitlin for joining us. Caitlin Arnwine. You used to be Caitlin Cobb. I know from Thinking Poker and several other places where you've stamped yourself onto the poker scene. It's been a big year for you, and you just have a million things to talk about. So thank you for coming here on the Rec Poker Podcast and sharing your story with us.
Thanks so much for having me. It has been a big year.
Yeah, it really has. Well, let's start there. Regular listeners will know, I don't want to put you in a box. Let's just start by, if our listeners don't know who you are, why don't you just take a little while to sort of explain your own space in the poker world today, and then we'll talk about kind of how you got there.
Okay, so today I'm still 20th worldwide for women in earnings for 2023. I'm ranked as 20th. Earlier this year, I was actually fourth in the world. One of my claims to fame this year is when in February I came in second in a big event at MGM National Harbor, their PWPO main event, and I got second place for $172,044. Yes. And me and Justin Liberto battled heads up for over an hour. So that was so much fun. Maybe like the most fun I've ever had playing poker was just playing that. And after 3 days, I came out a second, and I went into the final day as chip leader, where the poker world had to take notice of me.
Mm-hmm. That's it. I love it. And it's not just there, though. You've been using your space in the poker world to raise awareness for a lot of causes and to talk about sort of representation in poker media. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about this, the road that's brought you to all this amazing success in the poker world?
Yeah, so I started playing poker in 2021 in June. That's when I started playing online poker because I have these really thick glasses I've had since I was 7 and I couldn't see the board in front of me. So all those years sitting behind my now husband, Justin Arnwine, like since 2015, like I couldn't even like see the board. And so I'd always go into the eye doctor and I'm like, I just want to be able to sit down at a poker table and see the cards. And nobody could do it. So before that, I got fourth actually in an online ring event in 2021 for $5,500. Nice. So that was like my thing there. And I met Adama and I got to talk to him and it was all really exciting. And yeah. And then finally I went to the eye doctor in 2022 and he said, I can give you 20/20 vision. And I was like, what? Let's go. So then I could finally see the board and I started playing live a little bit, not too much. I was still working for the National Coalition for the Homeless at the time. And then after I got engaged, I left the National Coalition for the Homeless just to work more on my mental health, which I was already doing. And then after me and Justin got married in December last year, I started going to the casino more and more often, right? And then I had a bit of a much more positive experience than maybe other people would, especially as a woman and a Black woman, because I was always already known as like Justin's girlfriend and now Justin's wife. So everybody had been waiting and watching, like, when do you play? Do you know how to play poker? And I'd be like, don't know yet. Don't know. Oh, I don't know. Sometimes it'd be super serious and then sometimes like not so much.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. But so then I started learning more and then I won my very first live tournament, the last tournament that MGM held, their daily tournament of December last year. And then unbeknownst to me, I just found out last week from like a meeting I was held on a separate project that I'm working on that apparently that tournament that I won, I don't know who did this, but somebody was live tweeting that tournament. And so the person that I was on the meeting with said, yeah, I know all about that win. You guys battled heads up for a while. And I'm like, you have to be thinking about February. And then Justin was like, no, you guys did battle heads up for a while. He's like, yeah, it was almost like we were there because of all the tweet updates. So I don't know who was doing it. But then a crowd was forming and everything. And so much so that it got like everybody was just like, what is going on over there? And I guess part of the reason why that I didn't know before, somebody was live tweeting me, not even knowing I was going to win, keep in mind. And then I won, and then I got fourth in that nighttime event. And then I was just trying to focus on like working with the Transformative Justice Coalition because I do the Black History Month series every year. Mm-hmm. And so I just needed to focus on writing my 28 original articles. So I told Justin, like, and after being like angle shot at one tournament where I played that was like over $500, I was like, I'm not playing any tournament above a $400 buy-in again because they'll just mm-hmm. angle shoot you. And like universally, when everyone heard the story, it was like condemned. And I was just being silly. I didn't want to show how I played the best hand in the game, aces. So I didn't flip over my hand to win.
Oh.
So I was just like, so someone obviously saying I was new to poker said, I have two pair. I have nines and fours. Well, I actually had aces and fours. I just didn't realize the board was paired. And so I folded my hand. And then when I told that story and pointed out who he was, everybody was like, yeah, he, that was an angle shoot. That was an angle shot. And I was like, wait, what's that? What's going on here? And I was like, okay, no, they don't do that in the younger, ones, in the small ones. So I'm not playing anything. But then, so Justin had been going to Maryland Live. He played in their main event right before the PWPO in February this year. And then one of the floors over there was like, okay, where's Caitlin? And he's like, I tried to get her to play. She will not play. She says that she has to focus on her work and she doesn't want to, you know, spend money for this higher buy-in. And he was like, have her play in the next big event. So Justin was like, look, you made me look bad. You made me look like I didn't want you to play in an event. Like, you are playing in the next event. And so we were like, okay, I'm going to play the Mystery Bounty. Fired a bunch of bullets there, didn't do anything. But all during that, I was like trying to figure out what the best hand on the board was like the whole time. So I still think even though I didn't cash anything, like I really got something out of that. I think that really helped. And then our plan was if I busted out of the main event that I would play the rookie. because you had to have under 25,000 in caches. And then I said, after that, you can't bother me about poker at all this month. I need to focus on the Black History Month series. But that's not what happened. I bagged my first ever day two. And I wasn't even really tweeting on Twitter too much at the time, like not even just personally. And I was just like, don't want to alarm anyone, but I just bagged my first ever day two. And then like at the end of day two, I was the chip leader. And like I knocked out, I went head to head with like three different bracelet winners, which was cool. Justin Liberto, Joe McKeon, and Tim Faro. And I knocked out two out of the three, Justin Liberto being the other one. So I knocked out Joe McKeon, and when I knocked him out, everybody was like, oh my gosh, do you know who that was? And I was like, no.
It's a cool feeling, isn't it? It's amazing. This small poker world, you end up kind of cheek to jowl with a lot of these legends of the game, yeah, and so, you realize they're human too.
Yeah, so I went from being like Justin's like wife and girlfriend, and oh, isn't that cute? She's playing poker too. Holy shit, she just won $172,044. What, Justin, you married up? Like, what, you know?
Yeah.
and then anytime somebody would try to, you know, because people try to give like passive aggressive compliments, right? They're like, oh, guess you got to teach your husband now. And I'm like, no, he still teaches me. Sorry, I won't stand for any slander of a husband while I'm around. Like, that's what you're not going to do. So I just set it down immediately. But yeah, it was, it's been a wild ride. And after that, then Thinking Poker reached out to me, went on the podcast, talked about my experience, especially like being homeless, started working with the Pocket Queens community, started going to more women's events, started learning more about women in poker and focusing on and bringing my nonprofit organizing background, because I was social media director and executive assistant of the Transformative Justice Coalition. Like I said, I work with the National Coalition for the Homeless. I work with Lift Our Vote and a bunch of other nonprofits. Like, I'm really well known in the civil rights nonprofit community. And then I brought some of that organizing mindset I had into this and was like, we need to do something. So then Horseshoe Baltimore reached out to me. And then we started, I hosted the first ever women's tournament at Horseshoe Baltimore, which should be coming back in January 2024. We're hoping to make it a monthly event. So,
nice.
So yeah, I'm just, you know, I never meant to like be an advocate for women in poker. It just kind of happened. And yeah. I was like, okay, all right, sure. Let's do it. Let's go.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job with it. And the Horseshoe Baltimore, that's where you and I actually got to meet at the Run Good event recently. And you made a great impression, of course. And I'd already been meaning to get you on the show because everyone's talking about the Caitlin bot and how the impact that she's making on the poker world. So like homelessness, women's advocacy, rags to riches story. If anyone in the YouTube chat has any questions for Caitlin, feel free to just type them in. And if you're here in the Zoom panel and you'd like to ask, just unmute and I'll call on you. And I'll just remind our listeners after the interview, if you want to type the words food bank into the chat, we'll be doing our food bank raffle later on in the show. So stick around for that as well. Caitlin, so it's been a meteoric rise over the last couple of years, from, you know, really just getting into poker a couple of years ago to cashing for six figures. What happened? Like, what am I trying to ask? I guess what I'm asking, like, what did you do with $174,000? Like, how much of that went into bankroll? How much of that went into just like making some life investments? And how did you even adjust your mindset to all of a sudden having all this money? Talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so here, like, so Justin staked me in the tournament, and as is custom, you know what I mean? Our agreement was before I gave him half. Plus, I had already owed Justin money because, like, I had, like, dental surgery and owed him money and stuff from that, like, way back in, like, 2020 and stuff. And then he's like, wow, like, everything's clear, because I was able to give him, you know, his buy-in back, plus, like, the $85,000. So then I got $85,000, right? So I'm looking at my, like, statements from the year prior, and I made $12,000. And, like, normally I make between, you know, 12,000 or 20,000 or whatever a year. And then all of a sudden I'm beginning the new year with this amount. And I'm like, wow. So I have like 85,000 in the bank. So admittedly, I didn't manage it the way I should have. Because what I should have done is, and I knew this, it's just I was just got married and was just in the process of changing my last name. but still I let the perfect be the enemy of the good, because what I should have done is divvied my money, 40,000 for bankroll, and then 20,000 for life expenses, and like, I think this adds up, and like 25,000 for, yeah, it does, and 25,000 for, because I'm in an interstate custody case, and at the time, it was really rocky, and it was right after I won the money. And my daughter's birthday was also right around the corner. It's February 14th. So you figure I want all that money like February, like the first week of February. And so I'm like, ooh, I can super spoil her for her birthday, right? Like without her even knowing. And then, so I thought about all these different things I wanted to do with the money. And people like, you know, Biden might forgive your student loans, of which I only have like 3,000. And they were like, so, you know, you should maybe wait on that to see what happens and all this. So I gave my friend $3,000, because while I was homeless, he just helped me out a bunch. He never asked for anything in return. And I was like, look, there's no strings attached, whatever. I just want to like gift this to you. Like, and then from that, I, like I said, I spoiled my daughter for her birthday. And then I'm talking to my lawyer and I tell him, I'm like, send me your invoice, please. Like, let me pay you. And then he's like, he was like, oh, by the way, this trial has been scheduled since November, but I forgot to tell you, next month you have trial in the custody hearing. Like I said, I was going through a lot of mental health issues. And so I decided to like cut back the visits all the way while I went through like cognitive processing therapy, which is like 12 weeks of intense therapy that also involves exposure therapy for my PTSD. Mm. And so, and naturally they also went to the court and was like, you know, and so, I mean, they already had custody. And like I said, it was just visitation rights and stuff like that. So we were trying to get that back, like back on track for me to just go see her, because I'd completed it. I'd been sending them letters from my therapist and all this kind of stuff. We were on like rocky ground. And so I was at this point just telling my lawyer, look, we just need to go right to court. I'm just sick of this. You know what I mean? You know, she didn't want to come to my wedding, like all this kind of stuff. I didn't let them run out of here though. And I was like, you know, I've been trying since October. I've given them everything that they've asked for. I've had my therapist write all these letters. They told the court that they would. Like, I'm just sick of it. We just need to go to the court, you know. And then he says, oh, yeah, there's already a trial scheduled, by the way. It's been scheduled since November. I just forgot to tell you. And oh, so the pretrial is in 2 weeks and the other trial is next month. And I'm like, what? And so he's like, yeah, so can you stage a room? Well, that's why there's like dog pictures and stuff all over the place. Can you stay in the room so that's where, like, you know, your daughter will go and stay? So, but now I had money to be able to do that. So some of the money went to that. Then I just prayed to God and I was like, look, I told Justin and everybody, I had to get like a list of witnesses ready, people that were willing to travel, people that were ready to, and I had to do it all in 2 weeks, get little statements from them. You know what I mean? Prepare myself for everything. And I'm like, the best outcome would be if they come out of the pretrial and say that they can, you know, that we don't have to go to court. I'm prepared to go to court, but sure, like that we don't have to.
Yeah.
And God answered my prayer. They didn't even know I had won the money. And the lawyers came out of pretrial and they said, my lawyer called me and said, yeah, so they're ready for you to see her. You should shoot her an email. They said this weekend or next weekend. I'm like, okay, yeah, right. So I shoot her an email, surprise. A couple hours later, she gets back to me same day and said, yeah, this Friday we'll be in Maryland. I'm like, what?
What? So then,
insane. Then like, so we're working really hard on getting this agreement up, and then it switches somehow in the process from being all about my mental health to being about what my daughter is comfortable with. So my mental health is no longer in question. Don't know how that happened either, but it didn't. And then we don't have to go to court because we reached an agreement and I can go up there and see her twice a month. So because I had the money, a lot of the money went to that. And when I say go up to see her, she lives in upstate New York, okay, and like 9 hours away from Canada. And I live in Maryland near Washington, D.C. It's like a 9-hour drive. They just cut the Amtrak from going up there. There's like no planes that go up there besides little planes. There's only like one bus line and that's been all torched and stuff because of all this stuff. So it's really hard to get up there. It's really expensive to get up there, especially because if you're traveling by bus, it can take up to 2 days. So you got to stay a night in New York City or what have you. And so the average cost of a trip is about $1,000 plus.
That's a lot.
Just to go up there to see it. And so then after doing that for several months, so that's where some of my money went. After doing that for several months, then I just decided, you know what? My daughter's 11. She wants to be there with her grandparents. Her grandparents want her. I made a vow to my husband that it was going to be God, him, and then my daughter. And me leaving twice a month to go see her isn't keeping that vow that I made to him. And it also isn't being respectful of myself, and that, you know, I'm just starting to final table a lot at poker, and then I leave for a weekend and I'm traveling like twice a weekend, and it's really hard. So after talking to friends and family and everything like that, I made that decision, which felt really good. Like, it's hard, but it feels good that it was on my terms. The court didn't make me, they didn't make me, nobody made me. Talked to with them, my lawyer, my daughter, like everybody. And so now I have a lot less trips, which is really good financially. Also, $6,000, I'm ashamed to say, went to a video game.
Oh, yeah.
It's an app. I could have done so much with that $6,000 because, you know, you just don't think about it. You're like, oh, $100, $100, $100. Then you're looking at the Google statement and you're like, how much did you spend on the video game? So I'm going to stop spending on this app. That was like my big splurge.
Nice.
All the big splurge was on clothes, like, obviously.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you always dress to impress. Every time I see you, you're in something fantastic and fabulous. The tiara is really nice, Sasha. There's so much to unpack here. Sasha, I think you unmuted first, so why don't you jump in?
Hi, Caitlin.
I thought that was too long-winded. I was just...
No, I love it. That's what we're here for. We want to hear it. Sorry, Sasha.
I'm so happy to finally meet you. I was seeing so much love for you on social media. And I'm so happy to hear your story. And so I have several reactions. First of all, I left New York for Vegas and you gave me like my progressive troublemaker fix. Thank you. I miss my progressive community there like every day. So I'm thrilled to hear about your commitments and your work. And your story is just stunning. And I'm incredibly proud of you, which is too small of a statement. I appreciate that you kind of backed into this idea of being an advocate for women in the game. I share that with you. I'm on the cash side. I started as a tournament player a while back, but I found cash early and I never went back to tournaments. I love when I see women sitting behind men in casinos and I always say, get in the game. Okay. What are you waiting for? I do it. I literally do it all the time. They're like, oh, what? I'm like, no. You can do this. No resistance is allowed. So I wanted to ask you a couple of things. I've been writing about women's experience of poker for years. I've read lots of other testimonies. Women have written to me. I've read what Jen Shahadi had to say in her book on chess around playing with certain kinds of men, giving men too much power. Some of the stuff I deal with as a woman on the cash side and my mental game work, which I just feel like basically at this point in my training is like the paramount for me. Well, my two questions for you is like, you clearly have a native ability for the game. When you were, quote, sitting behind your now husband, did you have a sense of how you were absorbing the game and how do you kind of explain to yourself and to the world just how quickly your mind became a very, very powerful poker mind? That's the first question. My second question is what's your experience of the, I don't think all of poker is gender, but women are still a tiny percentage of the overall poker population, and it's even less in cash than on the tournament side. What's your experience of playing against the male energy, the angle shooting? What's been your mental game, your mindset work that you've done in especially in that gender category?
Thank you so much. Oh, it's so great to meet you. I look forward to also like learning more about you and seeing on the Rec Poker website as well as one of the team members. So for your first question, I I didn't really realize that I was even observing anything when I was sitting behind Justin all those times. Like, oftentimes I wouldn't even know if he won unless the pot was like pushed towards him. like I literally sat behind him for hours and hours, and then sat behind his friends too. We weren't called the Kitty Crew then, but sat behind like his friends while he played cash, and like they would even show me how they were playing and stuff like that. And like people just let it rock. Like, it was, you know, I would just sit there and chill or go and get food and stuff for them. So I didn't even realize that I was absorbing the game. I would ask questions. Like, I asked Justin one time, I was like, what makes you better at poker than other people? Because, you know, he's racking up in cash. And he's like, I make less mistakes than they do. And I thought that was a really humble, interesting answer. He'd always been trying to get me to play poker. And then when I finally did decide to, you know, take it seriously, I was like, all right, fine, let's give this a go, because I need something that's less stressful for my mental health. I need to be able to make my own schedule, you know what I mean? Like, okay, let's do it. Like, it really came from like reading like Maria Konnikova's book and stuff, and seeing that how she compared poker to life, and that really started to form my mindset. And so I started reading, you know, modern theory of poker, and like I said, like I talked to Adamo, and really just started like listening and watching like the Kitty Crew and stuff before we were even known as the Kitty Crew. and then like, so yeah, I'd say that reading books or whatever your medium is, because people learn in different ways. Me, I learned through like reading books a lot. Like, and I have a very visual mind. And so when I'm reading books, you know, it's like that you just get lost in the sauce. Like, it's just like you're watching a movie. So for me, I think reading the books actually is what really helped me. And maybe watching him play and seeing that it was a path forward did, but I'd say just, you know, find your medium. There's lots of, if you're just starting in poker, there's lots of videos and stuff that you can watch. The problem is that I know it's kind of scattered all over the place, and it's kind of hard and intimidating, and you don't really know what you're looking for, mm-hmm. which of course is why that's one of the reasons I'm actually working on a poker website for beginners that puts all this information in one place and has different mediums for who's ever learning. And go ahead, feel free, anybody, to go ahead and make a website for beginners as well. It's great. The more people, the better.
it is what we're working on here as well. Like, we cater to recreational players, and it's I feel like a lot of people are kind of catching on that the recreational player pool is where the future of poker is going to come from. This is the future of the game, is encouraging people to have fun with the game. And, you know, not all of us approach it as a chance to just go make $1 million and go pro and crush your opponents on the felt, you know. So I think we all have to do more to bring more beginners into the game, to make them more comfortable, to make them better at poker too. So I love that idea. Yeah, that's fantastic.
And as Justin says, just nobody just wants to be sitting at the table and being dead money, whether they want to be recreational or professional. They just want to know how to play. And it's always surprising to me that representation actually does play such a huge role. Because just, I was playing at an MGM tournament the other day, and a woman came into the bathroom. She was one of the masseuses there. She was a Black woman. And, you know, she looked older than me. And she's like, you inspire me so much. And I was just, you know, I didn't really know what was going on. She's like, I want to be like you when I grow up. And I was like, thank you. And she was like, well, ever since you got second in that tournament, I've been learning how to play poker.
Oh,
and I
run
into people all the time that when they hear that I'm a professional poker player will be like, I can finally say I've met a professional poker player. I've never heard that. And so many people who are interested in getting in the game is like, I want to know. Like, there's so many people that do want to learn poker. They just want to learn from people that might look like them or have their same experiences, either being a Black person or a Black woman or, you know, whoever they identify, or a woman in general, whoever they identify with, someone that they can see themselves doing it. And as to your second question, what's my experience playing against like male energy? I'd say, like I said, in Maryland, it's very different because I came out, you know, from being Justin's girlfriend and then Justin's wife. So, you know, and actually for me, it was very interesting when I used to sit behind Justin in the poker room, because I was like, and I didn't play poker, mind you, but I'd always be like, you know, coming from the streets, right? I'm like, oh my gosh, poker players are like the most respectful. Like, I don't, like, nobody's flirting with me or anything because I'm sitting behind you. Like, like, and of course that's still wrong. And it's like, they respect me because I'm sitting behind a man they respect, right? But like at the same time, so, but it's true when I started playing poker too, that the Maryland bubble, as you know, we call it, is just different, because the floor and stuff don't allow that kind of shit to happen. But, you know, then when I went and played in like Florida, for example, well, we all know about, the guy that entered into the women's event and stuff like that. And I was there for that. That's when I really started kicking my organizing and the higher gear. But then even not that tournament, even the next tournament, the $400 buy-in, me and another woman got into a pot and somebody yelled cat fight. And I was just like, I was just like, okay, so next time you get into a pot with a guy, I should say dog fight, right? Yo, the whole table's energy switched. He was like, what? No, what do you mean? I didn't mean it like that. Man, why you got to start trouble? But here's the thing. Oh. I didn't need to stay in the mean. And you know, in the moment, it's like, yeah, the fact that you're offended proves that you didn't mean it as just a joke. And then, so yeah, when you go outside in the Maryland bubble, suddenly there is a lot of that sexism and stuff. And then when you play women's events, this is why women's events are so important. Conversations happen at women's events that don't happen anywhere else. And things happen at women's events. When a man enters into a women's event, you see all the women stand up for themselves and for other women. And like, it's just so empowering to see the way they talk and the way they act. And then, you know, to hear them sitting at the table and being like, yeah, so I was playing cash the other day. Of course, I was sexually harassed when I sat down. As always, all the women shake their heads. And they just say it casually because that's what's expected. And I mean, part of the problem is that women have gotten so used to it that then they play women's events and like, man, it's harder. No, you're just not getting the female treatment because women aren't giving other women the female treatment. They're just treating you like women, you know, like poker players. Whereas, you know, when I would win a hand before I got second in a big event for six figures, everybody would clap and they would be so disappointed when I got knocked out. And I thought that was so nice. I thought that I felt so like, but then I learned that was just the female treatment. And like the male guys were, you know, my friends were just like, yeah, so you only got a couple more weeks of the female treatment. That ended way sooner than they thought it would. It was a whole different vibe. And I'm like, wait, what's going on? But what's going on is people were just treating me like a real player that actually saw me as a threat and not as someone that they could just like coddle and stuff. So as far as the mindset work that I do, like I said, going to women's events, being in the Pocket Queens women's group are really helpful because, you know, you'd be like, oh, I dealt with this today. What do you guys do about it? Oh, This makes me feel this kind of way when somebody says, oh, I got the bitches when they lay down, queens. Oh, I'm sorry. And it's like, why does that feel so bad? Oh, because it's infantilizing us, you know. It's treating us like we're infants and everything by saying they can't cuss. So I'll actually cuss more at the poker table, purposefully, just to, like, offset that. And then one of the women might say, oh, okay, well, whenever I have jacks, if someone does that on my table, I say, oh, I got the assholes. Or if I got kings or something, and you know, I just flip it around on its head. And so they talk about strategies or, you know, they're just there for one another. Like, oh my gosh, I dealt with this. So that's some of the mindset work that I've done. And also just standing up for myself more, just not being intimidated. Right now, because I won six figures and when I'm in the Maryland bubble, they all know me pretty well. So when someone that doesn't know me sits down and they start talking shit to me or just, you know what I mean? Being like, whatever. The guys will actually go silent because they're just like, basically just like, this guy doesn't actually want to mess with her.
Let me ask you about that. Cause that's a situation that comes up a lot here. I know we've got some questions in the YouTube chat. I think Sasha has another follow-up, but I can't turn down the segue. So we talk to a lot of women players, pros and coaches here on the show. And, everyone has a different answer for this, but I guess my question to you, Caitlin, is if one of our listeners is at the table, let's say a guy, but who wants to be an ally or a friend to the cause of women in poker, what are some things that we can do to either signal that we're trying to be helpful or to actually be helpful and not just be some kind of white knight who's part of the problem? What are some actual things that people at the table can do to help with this issue?
Well, you can speak up. Like that's a really big one. Even if we might not speak up for ourselves because we don't want to be seen as troublemakers, which somebody posted in a story in one of the comments on one of my threads that that there was two guys about to fight and she tried to intervene and she went to the floor. None of the other men were doing anything. And then that floor called her a troublemaker and that she better stop or else she's going to get kicked out and she better know her place. Mm. So a lot of the time, women might not speak up unless it's a women's event. because we feel better speaking up. Or unless a guy enters, right? In Florida. But so speak up at the table. And then if you don't see anything, you know what I mean? Like sometimes I've been angled and then somebody else was like, yo, look, like watch the hand. He was like, I saw you do this a couple times to her. Stop trying to angle shoot her. And the rest of the table chimed in. This was just recently. And then the other thing you can do is if it gets to be, try to change the subject. Then if you don't want to be too confrontational, I've seen that too, where a dealer was telling us a story and stuff about like, you know, drunk girls at the bar or whatever. And one of my friends expertly just changed the subject. And like nobody else noticed, but I did. So I went and I thanked him afterwards. And he said, you're welcome. So he knew what he did. He like expertly changed the subject. Or go to the floor yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like if speaking up at the table doesn't work, you don't want to be that confrontational. You can go to the floor and say something. Because they'll more than likely take it better from you, honestly, than they would coming from a woman, because women are just seen as too sensitive and too emotional.
Well, and more, you know, more people talking about it, that helps get it across there. Sorry, Joe, do you have something timely?
Yeah, I was just going to say it sounds like you're telling us to channel our inner John Lewis and create some good trouble in terms of dealing with the problems at the table. So does that sound about right?
Yes. Yeah, get into good trouble, dang it.
That's right. Cause that good trouble.
I'm censoring myself at all, and then I'm like, dang it.
Well, we've got a couple questions in the YouTube chat here. So Craig Savage, who I know we got a chance to meet down in Vegas, he's also involved in 100K Studios, which you are as well. We'll talk about that a little later in the show, I think. Says, I want to be like Caitlin too, someone who makes a difference on and off the table. That's right. And also says that recreational players are some of his favorite people. Vice Chic, a new viewer here, chimes in and wants to know, have you played in the international world or do you have any plans to play internationally, Kate?
I have not played in the international. I've never actually been out of the country. I don't have my passport yet, much to my mother-in-law and my husband's like grave disappointment that I don't have it yet. Because my mother-in-law is always trying to get me to go on these like trips. And I'm like, I don't have my passport. Now that I've changed my name, you know, I'll work on
right.
it. But not at this time, but if I get another big win and better with my money, I wouldn't say that I necessarily blew all my money this time. I just didn't manage it as well as I should have. I feel it should have lasted a lot longer than like 6 months. But in the future, yeah, playing on the international scene would be great. And me and my husband would love to travel as well. And
yeah, well, it's nice. It's nice having someone to travel with too. Because lot of the expenses for poker players are flights and accommodation and that, like the trip itself. And so you can go with somebody else and defray those costs. It's a great way to explore the world. You know, you've got this great excuse to go play a poker tournament somewhere fun. I can tell you've already got the note for that. There's another question here from the RRCCC that says, you mentioned Maria Konnikova's book. What are your favorite poker books? You mentioned reading a lot as the way of training yourself. What are some of your favorite poker books?
So Maria Konnikova is the biggest bluff. The Modern Theory of Poker, even though admittedly I've only read half of it, I'm going to go back and read those books from new eyes now.
Smart.
And then also Gus Hansen's Every Hand Revealed. That's a great book. Nice. I love that one. You can kind of see my influences, I guess, there. People are like, oh, did you read Gus Hansen's book? Of course she is, because I'm really aggressive at the table.
Well, I don't blame you for wanting to get back into modern poker theory. That one, we did a book study here with Rob, and it was pretty dense material. We spent a long time going through that one chapter by chapter.
Yeah, definitely. Those, I think, would be the three top books off the top of my head. There are other books that I'm reading, too. You know what I mean? Like I'm focused on like Marcus Aurelius's Meditations and stuff.
Oh, especially fantastic. The
therapist said that was a great one to read after I won all of the money. And there's other books that I'm reading like that that aren't necessarily poker books, but they still help you in some kind of way, like The Luck Factor and other books like that.
I apologize. We might be kind of cutting in on each other a little bit. There's a bit of a lag for the audio. So if the audience notices, that's why. But great on Marcus Aurelius. Rob, we got another Stoic in the group, man. Here we go. We talk about the Stoic philosophy a lot on the show and how it makes you a better poker player, maybe a better citizen. We won't go down that tree right now, but that's a very exciting reading list that you've got there. Now, you have a lot on the go. How do you balance your time in a day or in a week between studying poker, playing poker, reading, you know, doing all this fantastic? It's pretty active advocacy. I'm looking at this list of things that you've been working on.
Yeah.
Where does the time go? How do you do it?
So I'm just working on that part still. Just for instance, I suggested to Justin, and we're going to do this after we watch like one of the master classes, or after I watch the master class on the Atomic Habits, because he already watched it. And but we're going to be creating a weekly schedule together, just so that we know each other's schedules and, you know, going over finances and that kind of stuff, just so we're on the same page, things that we should have been doing earlier in the year. And then also I'm just trying to make sure I schedule my time, because there was my old assistant actually at the National Coalition for the Homeless. He told me, he's like, I just don't want you to do the same things you were doing before. If you want different results, you got to do something different. And before, I was trying to schedule every minute of my day. And therefore in 2019, at 26 years old, before I could even really schedule every minute of my day, I went into the hospital for a heart issue. And I was basically held overnight, and they had to give me like Advan and stuff like that, because I was pounding back the energy drinks, not drinking enough water, and just scheduling every minute of my day and doing too much. So I'll do that. And then I got burnt out, which I didn't know was also a result of my PTSD, but also overworking myself. So when it comes to me and taking on new projects, I do have to schedule myself, which is why I'm so grateful to poker, because it gives me the chance that I can schedule myself. I'm grateful for the nonprofits, because I go in there and I do like the Black History Month project or the Gen Z and Millennial Votes Matter training that we did last week. I pick and choose the projects that I work on with all of the nonprofits that I work and all of the work that I do. And I'm so blessed and privileged to be able to do that, coming from like being homeless and working like 7 days a week and, you know, sometimes three jobs at once while homeless. I'm so blessed now to be able to pick and choose and get paid well for doing so. And so I just try to balance the calls and make sure my calendar stays right. And then what I learned from working that 6 months at this little small business I worked with, AT&T, is that when creating the schedule, the part that I forgot is you're supposed to also list four things you'll do for your body, four things you'll do for your mind, four things you'll do for your spirit, and four things you'll do for your career in the week. And if I had been listing those things, I would probably have been better off. So it's still a work in progress for managing my time, but I am getting
that sounds like a lot that's to take on in any time. Week, but that's the only way to do it. Yeah, good for you. I love it. Sasha, did you have something?
Yeah, just as a PS, Caitlin, thank you so much for calling out this idea of the cat fight thing. I've written about that in the past. It's framed when two men are battling each other. It's framed as the beauty of testosterone-filled competition, right? And when two women are battling each other, like you said, it kind of gets reduced to something, a very sexist cliche, which I've never quite understood. I also wanted to amplify what you were saying about, and what Jim was saying about how to be present for conflict. My coach has advised me, and I generally don't, but I'm a New Yorker, so you can imagine, you know, like you, I can make somebody cry with a lot of words. I don't engage. And if it gets extreme, I will always call the floor, or I leave the table, and then I make a decision. And I only play in rooms in Vegas where I know the floor really, really, really has my back. And I know the floor staff in the major rooms, and that's very important. And I would just encourage women, as we're talking about this, as much as possible, never to take it on personally and to always call the floor. And I agree with you. Men don't often say anything. Craig, who wrote in today, he and I had chatted about this when I met him in Vegas. I'm sometimes kind of shocked that men say absolutely nothing. But yet again, it's not their job. The dealer should call the floor, or the player should call the floor, or the player should get up from the table. And then it gets handled through, quote, official channels. Because women shouldn't have to mess up their mindset for a cash session. You know, and if someone's targeting me or going off of me, I've changed tables occasionally. I quietly put my chips in my rack and I'm out of there. So there's some simple solutions to difficult moments and resolution that can happen quickly. So I'm glad you raised all that.
And the problem is also, like, let's just be real, it can be dangerous for women too. Yeah. I was lucky. but it's not. You can laugh with me because you know it's that nervous laugh that, yeah, it's true. But like when I got second in that event, what a lot of people don't know is that I was so lucky to be able to have my husband and my kitty crew around that, like, some of them even skip work that day just to watch me. Because after I won, I was so excited. I wanted to, like, tip the dealers and stuff, but my crew was acting all weird. And then we went back into, we went out to eat and stuff. And then I was like, I just want to go back up and sit the dealers. You know what I mean? I said, I'd take a picture with this person. Like, I don't understand what the problem is. And I'm like, why are you guys acting so weird? Would somebody tell me? And they're like, okay, you were being targeted. They're like, there was somebody there that was on the phone the whole time. And they were giving updates to somebody. And it wasn't a fan. And that person was like saying, that was saying this loudly enough that he didn't think anyone was paying attention. But luckily, like I said, like, the men were alert, and that, you know, because everybody else in my crew, you know what I mean? Like, the kid crew is a guy. And so they were like, and, you know, are vigilant and have dealt with, like, street stuff and stuff. So they said the guy was on the phone saying, like, oh, you, she looks like she has muscle, but she looks kind of sweet. And the same person had been involved, or somebody said had been involved with placing a tracker on a car and robbing, like, an old man for $5,000 in the previous week. And so, and the reason they didn't go to the floor or anything about this is because they said, at least they know who this guy is. Whereas the people who were doing this would have just replaced him.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I couldn't withdraw all my money at once. And so instead we had to go back and get like $5,000 at once, which again, didn't help me save money. And I'm still coming from like a broke mindset. And so I don't see it all in my account at the same time. So it's, you know, if I had, maybe I would have portioned it out better. But like, so it can, you know, men will get in fights, they'll get in testosterone fights and say, like, let's see you outside and stuff. But like, you have instances like that, right? Where they weren't targeting Roberto, you know what I mean? They were targeting like me. They weren't targeting any of the other players there. And then you also have, I don't know if you feel it, Sasha, but men get uncomfortable when women win.
Wait, seriously? I've never heard that. No, I've never heard that, Kim. I'm kidding. They do. They really do. And you're very gracious in the way you're saying that. But yes, you're absolutely right. You're very fucking gracious.
And I'm saying it because it causes extra stress to women at the table, extra unnecessary stress. We can feel, especially if you're like me and you have high anxiety, we can feel like men getting tilted. And they're not getting tilted in the same way that they are if a man is winner. They purposefully don't like it. And then when a man does beat you in a hand, it's like every man at the table takes this collective breath that they can finally feel like, finally, she's been put in her place.
Hmm.
And and not that it's necessarily like would be a danger. And this is even from like people that are your friends and stuff. Like if I'm three men and dressing too much when we're at the same table, there'll be like domestic violence and stuff like that, right? Like, like you don't really get the way around, but like men get uncomfortable. They do. They get uncomfortable when I'm winning too much. They get uncomfortable when women are winning too much, and they try to attribute it to all of these other things. And at like, if you have really high anxiety like me, you're gonna take on that stress that you feel from other people. Yeah. But my therapist did tell me a way to do this. He said, why does it bother you that they're annoyed with you? And so I had to take that to heart and been like, why does it bother me that they're annoyed with me? It doesn't really. Like, the fact of the matter is that, like, some women, it can definitely, if you're feeling that, you can feel this undue pressure and stress that everyone's just kind of out to get you. And not in the normal poker way that everyone's out to get you. They're out to get you because you're a woman.
Yeah. Again, it's a little bit different in cash, a tiny bit different because in the tournament, it's a different dynamic in tournaments, as you well know.
Yeah.
It's winner take all. And, you know, there's some of that happens. Some of that happens in a cash game. But, you know, the flip side to it in cash is The beautiful, beautiful silver lining to some of that gender tension is that if I get players who have like been in the game, you know, for 35 years and I get them to tank over some small bet, that's the flip side of the gender, because they don't want to lose to me, and they're terrified. And I love that feeling too.
Yes, no, it is a great feeling. I honestly, it sounds terrible, but I like being aggressive, especially towards men when it comes to three betting and playing your cards right and poker. Because like, I know if I was on the streets like I was, and I was sitting on a grate in New York City and like just crying there and praying for someone to see me as if I was human and stuff, and going all that time asking people for money or singing for my money or what have you, or trying to get a job, I know that the same people at the table, they want to give two shits about me. They only give two shits because I won six figures and because I'm sitting at the table and I'm a popular figure. So I don't feel bad. And in fact, it empowers me more to be as aggressive as possible.
Yeah.
Like against them. Because like, I know these same people that they wouldn't care.
Yep. Well, we're coming up on the hour. Joe, I think you had a question. Yeah. And then I'll give our folks in the YouTube chat one more chance to type any questions in for Caitlin. And then we'll let her get back to this fantastically busy, wonderful life that she's got going.
Oh, yeah, because I actually got a show description to write tonight for the radio show.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. A big one. Sorry, Joe, go ahead.
No, I thanks so much for coming on and talking. I actually have about 100 questions, but Jim doesn't let me ask more than one typically because I am known to be able to talk. I had one comment and one question. The comment really is that I do think that it is men's responsibility to speak up to make the good trouble at the tables for women, because one of the things that you said that well, what are you concerned about? But most of the statements when men make them, they're not making them, you know, in terms of statements to women specifically, there's always this underlying threat to them. And it does. And women are much at a higher rate in terms of physical and sexual violence and a variety of points. And one way that men can project power on women is through sexual violence. And so more so at the poker table, I think that is something that women do need to be concerned about. And for that very reason, not just because you shouldn't have to stand up on your own to go to the floor. The men around the table should be standing up and saying, no, you're just not going to harass and threaten somebody, even if you think it's just all in fun, because it's not fun for anybody. It's not fun. Honestly, some of the most uncomfortable times I've been at poker tables is when somebody starts talking about sleeping with a dealer or something like that, because it just creates—it's just this threat, and the dealers tend to deal with it. And then you have to speak up and you say, "Shut the hell up," and they usually will, because they're not going to mess with me in the same way that they might with women. So, I just wanted to make sure, you know, that you know, men who are listening to this podcast, do not say, "Whew, you know, I can just give up my role," because we do have a huge role in terms of making it safer for women to play so that they feel comfortable and help to, so that you women don't have to actually take all of the direct role in terms of dealing with them.
And I think we are, a lot of the silent guys at the table are kind of in on it in a way, because I think the minority of players that are jerks, because they are typically a minority, sometimes they're just using the presence of someone that they can make uncomfortable as a way to elevate their own status with the rest of the group. Like they're not even trying to put you down to put you down. They're putting you down because it makes them appear or feel like they appear stronger amongst their peers at the group. And so I think there is this role that we have to play there as saying, actually, I'm not a peer of yours, if that's the way that you're trying to run this. That actually you put, whether it's about women or minorities or anyone who feels uncomfortable at the table, if you're trying to make someone feel uncomfortable at the table to build yourself up, that's not going to make a good impression on me. I'm not a peer of yours. I expect better of you and like do better. Because I think just being quiet there's a complicit element to that. Because what we really need to do is break this idea that by putting other people down, you're going to effectively bring yourself up in our society, because it's not something that's going to fly.
And I hope that if I'm ever at a table, you never presume that I'm hoping that you'll be harassed in that way, because I'm not breathing a sigh of relief. I've been beaten by so many women in poker. You know, Jim talks about it all the time. If someone's going to get beat, it's going to be Joe, you know? So, and I'm proud that, you know, that that's happened. I do want to ask, this kind of jumped out at me. Did you say that you played a tournament for $100,000, including head up, while you were going through cognitive processing therapy?
So I had just finished cognitive processing therapy that October.
I have to give you props for that, because that just explode. I don't know if people know what cognitive processing therapy is. It's actually an evidence-based treatment for PTSD. But what it requires you to do is to go in to the thing that you are frightened by most and keep talking about it and talking about it until your anxiety finally dissipates. People don't like to do it because it raises their anxiety through the roof. You almost have to raise it to the point that it's almost unbearable. So kudos to you for one, being able to get through that, but also being able to somehow play poker, because I can't play poker calm and win, as I've just said. So to be able to do that while you're going through that treatment is just astounding.
Yes, I have completed it on subclinical levels of PTSD, but yes, it does involve exposure therapy, where you have to write several accounts of the worst thing that ever happened to you, and the worst thing is also defined by the thing you had the least control over. Mm-hmm. And then you have to read it to yourself daily for like weeks, and then you process your thoughts around it and you find stuck points and stuff, and there's like homework every week, and sometimes, like I said, every day. So thank you. I appreciate that. But I did come through it.
And that's fantastic. It's very difficult, and a lot of people actually never make it because the requirement of the work is so high. And a lot of people think about it, it's like, oh, well, you'll go through relaxation. It's actually the reverse. You know, the goal is actually to increase the anxiety as high as it can be. So it works. So it sounds terrible, and it actually is, but it works. So, like I said, kudos for you for getting through it, most importantly, but also being able to play poker, because when I'm cranky, I can't do it.
Everybody was surprised how stoic I was when I was playing that main event that I got second in. And another point that I just want to say is that rooms that are respectful, like Sasha, you were saying that you only play in like certain rooms and stuff like that, we need to shout those out. And because we're always calling out the rooms that, you know, don't do well and that do give us problems, but we also need to shout out the rooms that are good, and the TDs and the poker directors and the dealers and stuff that are doing it right. And like you said, just speaking up at the table, because one time I was at the table, and then this is a Maryland Live, and behind me, a guy, he kept coming around talking to his friend who was during like a big event. And then he said, he starts telling like these crude jokes and stuff like that, and his friend's trying to get him to be quiet because he's obviously drunk. And then he comes up to me, and he had been like trying to talk to me, whatever like that. And he says, I've been creeping on you for a while now. And soon as he said that, my friend Melissa, the only other woman at the table, she's the one who spoke up and said, get the floor. And then the dealer did apologize. He said, I'm sorry, I didn't realize like what he was saying. And then the floor came, and the security was about to be calling him because he was like, I feel like saying it again. And he didn't want to leave until his friend like convinced him to leave. Mm-hmm. And then there was another time when, before I played poker, this didn't happen from this person at any point while I'm playing poker, and I have played with him since. But before I was playing poker, Justin kept three betting this one person. I guess I didn't even know what three betting was. I was just sitting behind Justin. And then the guy was like, man, if you keep three betting me, then I'm gonna kidnap Caitlin. And then I was like, weren't you going around saying you have a girlfriend? And he said, oh, wouldn't it be for my pleasure? And like, that should have just, when I told like my mother-in-law about it, like, you know, months later, she was like, he should have been kicked out of the casino for that. And I thought about it, and I was like, actually, yeah, why did I let that slide? I didn't have the confidence yet that poker gives you. But like, also, the dealer didn't say anything. None of the other players at the table said anything. You know, nobody, like, you know, and I think there's this culture among guys too. Even if you get threatened by a guy, or you hear that some guy is like threatening to, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, steal from you and rob you and beat you up, like, you know, in the parking garage. That kind of stuff, that you still don't snitch on them. You still don't say anything about them. But like, saying stuff about it and telling your story and speaking on behalf of other people is what's going to make it better. It's not doing anything. It's just going to make it worse. But yeah.
No, I feel like we could take a whole other hour here, Caitlin. We're going to have you back on sometime later this year, because there's a few things coming up that I want to talk to you about too. You've got this fantastic project for February 2024. at the Transformative Justice Coalition for Black History series there, I know. And I'm very interested in these teletown hall ideas that you've been talking about. You've got so many cool ideas. You've got so many great projects on the go. What do you say? Shall we get you back in here sometime before the end of the year and see if we can get another hour of brilliance out of you?
For sure, definitely. And I hope my answers weren't too like long-winded. I know. As a woman, I shouldn't be second-guessing myself, but like, I do, okay?
No. That's what we're here for. That's what we're here for. And I love that last point that you made about sort of just like getting more comfortable with the experience of playing and being at the table. And that's why I encourage folks, whether it's Rec Poker or 100K Studios or another group out there, Pocket Queens, that you can join and find some peers to enjoy the game of poker, to get more comfortable with the mechanics, to get more comfortable with the context and the etiquette, and to sort of get more comfortable with what is and is not acceptable, so that when you are out there playing live. And
as 100K Studios said, hashtag find your crew.
Yeah, exactly.
It's better with a crew.
It sure is.
A group of people.
It sure is. Well, thank you for joining our crew tonight. If folks want to get in touch with you and find out more about you, is there one social media handle or email address or website, or is there one preferred way for folks to reach out to you if they want to get more Caitlin in their lives?
For poker content, the best way is on Twitter. I mean, civil rights content too. It's on Twitter at the Caitlin Bot. That's at TheCaitlynBot.
We'll make sure that's in the show notes as well. Caitlin Arnwine, thank you so much for joining our show tonight. And I'm already looking forward to our next conversation. Good luck in the meantime.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
All right. Well, if folks want to start typing the word food bank into the YouTube chat, we'll get ready to do our draw there. First, we're going to talk to Sasha Sutton about her joining the Wrecking Crew. She's found her crew. It's the Wrecking Crew. if folks want to find out more about Sasha, they can go to rec.poker/pokerforgirls, where her Wrecking Crew page is set up. But you can also tune in to episode 133 of the Rec Poker podcast back in, I think, 2019, where Sasha was a guest. And we got into sort of some of her story and her experiences in New York and going to Las Vegas. Sasha, welcome to the Wrecking Crew. Why don't you tell us a little bit about sort of what you hope to get out of the crew, how you're going to help our members get better at poker, and what you're enjoying about life in Las Vegas these days?
Oh, wow. Well, thank you so much, Jim. I'm thrilled to be part of this wonderful organization. And Caitlin's story is just so moving. I feel like women should have a tea. We should make a t-shirt that just says no more apologies.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to Caitlin about that.
Yeah.
I want a t-shirt. Company. I was thrilled to meet you recently at the Rec Poker meetup at the MGM here.
Yeah.
And we had such a robust conversation. And I'm very versed in all of the elite platforms for training. And I have friends up and down the poker food chain here and in New York, mostly here. And I was thrilled to find the mission and the commitment for Rec Poker. And I love the idea of, I mean, this is something I live in my life as a live Vegas grinder. I just love the idea of a whole organization devoted to helping people A, fall in love with the game, B, feel comfortable in the learning process, C, find a way to engage poker that isn't so much driven by kind of absolute achievement, which I also respect. The question of ego, how that impacts people's ability, how that impacts women's ability to even the fear and the trepidation of going into male environments. And even though women tournament players have a greater percentage of those overall populations, it's still a tiny number. So I was thrilled that you invited me to be part of this organization. And I look forward to not just helping women find their place in the poker community, because now I do consider this the beginning of the golden age for women in poker. I really do. Thanks to lots of organizations and players like Caitlin that have an analysis and have this amazing personal history. But I hope to give not just women, but women and men a chance to have conversations with me, say through my study group, which is starting that next Saturday, called Mastering Mindset. Mindset is a big word and a big idea, and lots of stuff tucks up under it for me. And at this point, I feel like everything I do in my live cash life in Vegas tucks up under mindset. So it's where I want to start my ongoing dialogue with the rec poker community.
Fantastic.
I answer everything?
Yeah. I have one question that as a Vegas cash grinder, you talked about sort of some rooms you like to play in, some rooms you don't. You and I have talked a little bit about playing at places where they don't drop an extra promotional jackpot, something right. like that. Can you just talk a little bit about sort of like choosing with savvy where to invest your time as a poker player?
Sure. I appreciate that certain players want to play in rooms that offer promotions. That's just a personal choice. It's not my choice, but when you're playing in a room that's offering promotions, whether it's high hand, bad beats, et cetera, there's always an additional promotional rake. So if you're playing especially a lower level, like a 1-3 with a promo rake, I mean, a ton of money is getting taken out of those pots. And the thing is, if you're going to be a tourist, so-called, in a room in Vegas where you're not a local and you're playing in a room with a promotional rake, the way the room is structured and the promos are structured, you may not even be there long enough to even realize any potential win. So there's a handful of strip casinos. I can't speak with any authority about most of the casinos off the strip, but there just remains 4 or 5 strip casinos that don't take a promotional rake. So if you want to just go to a casino to play 1-2, 1-3, 2-5, or now Bellagio just started running a 5-5 game with a $1,000 cap, the max rake is $5. And those 5 casinos are the Wynn, the Aria, the Bellagio, Caesars, and I'm pretty sure Resorts World is in this category. I haven't confirmed that, but at least those 4 main poker rooms in Vegas do not take a promo rake. And it's really simple. If you don't know if they do, you go into a room and ironically, I played at the Horseshoe a few months ago just to see what the renovation looked like. And it's an absolutely beautiful run room. And I actually won the high hand there. I don't like promo rigs, but like that. I was so excited. I'm like, oh my God. But if you go into a room, you don't know, just ask. I meet like a ton of players playing higher than me. And I say to them, what's the rake structure wherever they are? And they just go, I don't have no idea. So if you're a cash player, you need to always ask the question and don't be embarrassed to do that. And you can choose where your rake is going.
That's great. Thanks, Sasha. Like it makes her spends her days and nights, like I say, as a cash grinding pro down in Las Vegas. If you want to find out more about her, head on over to rec.poker/pokerforgirls, or you can join her weekly study group at 5 o'clock Easterns on Saturdays, 2 o'clock Pacific. And Sasha is also one of the coaches on the wrecking crew here, along with Rob, Chris, Taylor, Kim, and myself, and a few other active coaches. If you go to rec.poker/coaching, you can find some people to work with if you're interested in taking the next step. A lot of folks there would love to help you find your way in the poker world. And it's not just about poker strategy. There's a lot about the poker world that a coach can help you and accelerate your progress. So I'd encourage people to head on over to rec.poker/coaching and check that out. All right, we've got some fantastic comments in the YouTube chat here. My mom is apparently still having trouble logging into YouTube, but she texted me to say that our guest is very interesting tonight, and she's bummed that she can't type into the YouTube chat, but she looks like we're all having fun. So thanks, Mom. Always great to hear from you, Martha. I'm glad you're still a loyal watcher every week here on the Rec Poker Podcast. And I want to thank Sean and Craig. And it looks like we just missed a chance from Motha Grizzle to ask a question of Caitlin. Sorry, Motha, we must have just missed your timing there. But come on back when we have Caitlin back on the show later this year, and we'll get a chance to ask her about that. So keep typing the words food bank into the chat here, folks. With no John Somsky, I'm going to struggle through the home game results. And then Chris and Joe, have you guys figured out who's going to be figuring out who the winner is this week? I'll let you do that offline here while I get through it. So on September 25th, Bruce K54, Bruce Kiefer, won the Daily Series. That is his third of the year and ninth all time, if I'm reading this correctly. Congratulations, Bruce. Shark Slayer 21, Lucky Hawes, was the winner on the 26th. Way to go, Lucky. That's the fourth this year and sixth all time. Jeff Sedum, Jeff S., won. I might have just docked them there, but I'm pretty sure Jay Sedum is Jeff Sedum. I don't know. Maybe it isn't. We'll see. But congratulations, Jeff, on your win. That's his seventh of the year, 20th all time. So we got a chronic winner here. The mixed event on the 27th was won by Stewie13, Stuart Carriage. No surprise there. Stuart, seems like you win something every week here at Rec Poker. That's his 13th of the year and 38th all time. He is racing up the leaderboard. There's only so many people in their 40s before you get up to that lifetime achievement award. If you get to 50, it is time you can win that coveted silver pin. We only have one Mr. Evil Roy Dave who has won that so far. In the international series, we had Daniel A. Dand Resgi, who won their sixth international or their sixth tournament, their first international, their sixth tournament this year, and their 12th all time. And then Bone Crusher 14, Marcel Dusik, who won his first international event, sixth event all time. And a lot of those must be pretty recently because we've been talking about Marcel quite a bit on here. Congratulations, Marcel. And then on Sunday, our Learn Pro Poker event was won by Bruce Kiefer. He came back twice in a week. And as you know, the Sunday tournaments are free to play just like every night. But if you win, you get a prize, a real prize, a free month at Learn Pro Poker. So, Bruce, please send that email to info@rec.poker to claim your prize, and we'll get you all set up there. I see from the DisoCam that Chris Jones has been selected to figure out who our winner is going to be this week. Chris, let's just rally the troops here for a second. If we go into the YouTube chat, in order, I see the RRRCCC, Evil Roy Slade, and K Poker Wannabe. That's three. Yeah, how do you want to? How do you want to roll?
There's more people in the chat, but they're not. They're not.
That's true. There's like double digits of folks watching this right now. All you need to do is type the word food bank into the chat,
and then you're eligible. But they don't seem to want to be. So I'm going to roll the box car.
Oh, hold on.
Joe's saying there's. Yeah.
So you're going to do how many are you going to roll?
I was going to roll the box car and do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is that not what I should do?
All right. Well, why don't you do. There's how many people?
Three.
Okay. So just do the three. So the numbers are 1, 3, and 5, right? For the three people. Oh, now you got four. Never mind.
We got four.
Are you trying to figure out a way to get some money?
Roll an eight-sided.
And I will donate for every even number that's rolled, right? I will donate $10 to the food bank. In the odd numbers, one is the first person, two is two, three is three. One, three, five, seven, right?
Yeah.
Those are four numbers.
1, 3, 5, 7 are the winners. 2, 4, 6, 8. And for every 2, 4, 6, 8, you are donating to the cause.
I love it.
So I just got to keep rolling even. And
keep rolling even.
That's right.
We're just going to break you in half.
Maximum supply.
All right. Thanks, Joe. That's very generous of you.
Here we go. Ready?
Let's see who the winner is going to be this week.
It's
what do we
four.
Got?
We're on a roll.
Four. All right. So that's 10 bucks so far that Joe's got to pay out. Let's see what next we got.
It's a two.
Okay. Loving it so far. Good news for food banks in your community.
I got to get dice with white numbers.
That's my new.
I might be worth investing.
Let's see what the next
one
is.
It's another two.
Oh, but here it comes, Joe. There's a food bank somewhere in your area that's going to be.
You get only even sided dice.
It's another four. It's another four. Yeah.
I love it.
That's going to break you. That's another four. Does that still count?
I think it counts.
$50.
When in doubt.
That's a yep. six. It didn't roll on the thing, though. I'm re-rolling. Oh, that's still a six.
Okay. It was meant to be.
And that's a one.
Ah, there it is. All right. Finally took a one. So the first, and I see, and thanks to, let me see, we got Sean Child. I think it's your first time entering the food bank, but you were not a winner. Unfortunately, the first name was the RRRCCC. So send that email, the RRRCCC, to info@rec.poker. You have won a free month at Tournament Poker Edge, which you'll be very excited to check out. Compliments of our guest a couple weeks ago, Derek Tenbush. So I'm excited for that. And Joe, thank you so much for all your continued generosity. I want everyone to know that we do this raffle in part to raise awareness about food insecurity. It's an issue in all over the world, but even in your own neighborhood and your own community, you never know who might have a little trouble putting food on the table or feeding their kids, that sort of thing. I just encourage you, Google right now, take out your smartphone and Google food banks near me. You'll find a couple organizations that can benefit from either a few dollars, some time, or some non-perishable food items in your pantry. So be a good guy like Joe and make a donation. And there's lots of other ways you could be a good guy like Joe, but this is the one that we're asking for. There we go. He's got
I
it up.
I just want to show that I actually do donate the money. You know, I don't want people to think we're just doing this as some sort of...
Got the receipts to show it.
He's got the receipts. You know,
just a good thing. I mean, hopefully people... you know, we'll do it on their own because, as Jim said, it's really important. And a small amount of money makes a huge amount of difference in terms of allowing somebody to eat. And we all should be able to eat. Nobody should have to go to a food bank. But this is the country we live in and maybe not Canada. But
this is the state of the world that we find ourselves in, where everyone needs a little help. And supporting your local food bank is just a great way to make the world a better place in your own backyard. So I'd encourage everyone to do that. And thank you again, Joe, for your efforts. All right. Well, I think we should just hit a couple quick items before we roll on out of here. It's Monday night. So after the podcast, if you're a premium member watching right now, you can join us over Zoom. We'll be recording the forums edition of the podcast, which is a strategy edition, which is always a lot of fun. And we take a hand from our forums and put them out there on the show, which is great experience for everybody. We have added some events in October and November, and we're also skewing a little later in some of our events so that our West Coast fans can go get more involved at the end of the day for them. So folks, head on over to rec.poker/events, and you'll see a fantastic month calendar with just a ton of events going on here. Some are for free Rec Poker members. Many are for our premium members. But premium membership costs not a dollar more than $15 a month. It's a bargain. And if you use the code RECPOKER at checkout, you can get your first month for only $5. I also want to just hammer down this November 14th to 19th trip to Run Good event at Council Bluffs, Iowa. We're going to be giving away prizes, doing some training activities, having a ton of fun. And I encourage everyone, if you're on the fence, head on over to rec.poker/roadtrips and you can see what's coming up. But Iowa, November 14th to 19th at Council Bluffs is going to be a fantastic time. The Hallows Scream event at Running Aces from October 18th to 22nd. Don't forget that. And we are also adding some prizes to the home game league that are just for premium members. Rob, do you want to talk about that? Can we announce last month's winners, or should we just kind of talk about the structure and what's happening?
Yes, we can. What do they win, Jim?
Well, for the rest of this year, while we kind of figure out what a really fun prize could be for an annual premium home game player of the year race, we're going to be doing this kind of monthly competition, and the winner is going to get the chance to come on the show at some point in the future when we're interviewing a guest that they're very excited about and have that conversation about, be able to join the show and ask that star the questions that they have in mind. So that's what we're starting with. So Rob, what has been going on lately and what are we looking at for this month?
Well, in September, the number one ROI point leader was Bone Crusher 14.
Oh, wow, Marcel. I knew he'd been on a heater lately. Congratulations to Marcel Dusik.
And so we'll go through the top five real quick. And then we'll continue to do this through the rest of the year. And we'll have a 2023, for the last 5 months, whatever.
Yeah.
But for the last 4 months. And in the meantime, then in 2024, we'll continue to do this monthly and then continue to add on to it. So at the end of the year, we'll have a end of the year points leader for the entire year. So in September, it was Bone Crusher 14, then Les Paul 99.
Oh, right on. Huh. Great guy.
And then Jasper Jr.
Oh, Pat.
I met him at the original first Rec Poker Day, if you remember, Chris. And then this one, I don't know if it's a mistake. I double check the numbers, but it says Elvita 11.
Oh my God. Oh, ROI performance by Joe Coolis.
I thought he was just talking about he loses all the time.
It's an image play.
I had to go back and double check all the stats. I manually went in and made sure my math was correct.
It's all about bluffing king queen off.
And then in fifth place, our good friend Max Chaos 2112.
Beautiful. Yep, longtime friend of the show and guest in-house guest interviewer for
some of the best interviews around.
That's agreed. Well, that's awesome. So congratulations to Marcel. So Marcel, send me an email, please, jim@rec.poker, and we'll talk about who the guests are coming up, and you can choose a week that you'd like to join the show and ask some questions yourself. Marcel, I'm looking forward to that. And thank you, Rob, for putting this on every month. So every month we're taking the five premium members with the highest ROI. So all you have to do is you have to play a minimum of four tournaments. They're all free. And if you play four tournaments in a month, you're automatically entered. And Rob's going to go scurrying around in the spreadsheets and figure out who the top five players are by ROI. So it doesn't matter if you play 20 tournaments or five tournaments, as long as you play at least four, that's once a week, you'll be automatically entered into this. And we'll just see how the cream rises to the crop, to the top. Damn it. I was so close. All right, folks. Well, that was super fun. Great. Thanks to Caitlin. Fantastic guest. We'll definitely have her on again sometime soon. I have to thank Joe, Chris, Sasha, and Rob for their guidance and contributions. Of course, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino, couldn't do it without them. All these amazing, fun people in the YouTube chat, thank you so much. But mostly the audience, you listening at home, we couldn't do it without you. So thanks for your support, and we'll see you again next week. Have a great week, everybody.